This is Jeff Standridge, and this is the Innovation Junkies Podcast. If you want to drastically improve your business, learn proven growth strategies, and generate sustained results for your organization, you've come to the right place. Over the next half hour, we're going to be sharing specific strategies, tactics, and tips that you can use to grow your business, no matter the size, no matter the industry, and no matter the geography. Weekly, we'll bring in a top mover and shaker, someone who's done something unbelievable with his or her business. We'll dig deep. We'll uncover specific strategies, tactics, and tools that they've used to help you achieve your business goals. Welcome to the Innovation Junkies Podcast.
Hey guys, if you're looking to put your business on the fast track to achieving sustained strategic growth, this episode is sponsored by the team at Innovation Junkie. To learn more about our Growth DX, go to innovationjunkie.com/growthdx. Now let's get on with the show.
Hey guys, Jeff Standridge here, and welcome back to another episode of the Innovation Junkies podcast.
Yeah, it's great to be back, Jeff. It looks like it's Blue Shirt Day. What do you think?
It is Blue Shirt Day. Did your wife lay out your clothes for you as well?
Well, it was dark back there, but yeah, I think so. She must have been calling Lori and found out what you were wearing.
That's right. That's right. Crockett and I do that all the time. We show up at the same place dressed pretty much the same way. Hey, Jeff, we've got a great guest with us today, and I am very, very excited. You know, my first love was in healthcare, and so very excited to have with us Dr. Tracy Gaudet. In September of 2019, Dr. Gaudet began her role as Executive Director of the Whole Health Institute based in Bentonville, Arkansas. Before that, she served as an Executive Director of the Veterans Health Administration National Office of Patient-Centered Care and Cultural Transformation. She's been at Duke University as Executive Director of Integrative Medicine. She's board certified in OB-GYN. Her accolade list is long and extensive. She was featured on a PBS nationally acclaimed special entitled The New Medicine, named by Shape Magazine as one of 11 women who shaped the world in 2011. She was recognized as one of the top 25 women in healthcare by Modern Healthcare. She's the author of Consciously Female, a book on integrative medicine and women's health, and Body, Soul, and Baby. Dr. Gaudet, it is so fabulous to have you with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm psyched to be here.
Yeah, welcome to Northwest Arkansas. I know we were all extremely excited with the creation of the Whole Health Institute, and even more so when you were named executive director. But before we get into the serious stuff, we like to kick things off with sort of a random musing, just as an icebreaker. And the question of the day is, what is your favorite way to relax on a cool fall Saturday afternoon?
Well, I don't have anything super exciting, but I will answer it honestly. So since yesterday felt like the first real day of fall to me, I don't know, I'm not used to Arkansas falls, but yesterday was cool and beautiful. And although it wasn't a Saturday, the first thing I did was sit outside. We have a small backyard, but there's amazing trees here in Arkansas. I don't know if you appreciate them, but being from Idaho, like, we don't have trees. And the trees here are beautiful. And our backyard is like living in a forest with these amazing trees and the birds. And there is nothing I would rather do than sit outside in that environment, preferably by myself, with some silence, and just soak it in. That is by far my favorite thing.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah, that is one thing that, well, there's no shortage of that kind of tranquility in the Ozarks for sure. Jeff, what about you?
Well, it's actually very similar. As you know, we have a place up on Greers Ferry Lake, and I was there over the weekend, and I spent Saturday walking around and on my farm, so to speak, my wildlife farm, feeding the animals, and actually took several pictures of really cool leaves. And I remember thinking, you know, that these are great signs, leaves that were red, leaves that were yellow. You know, I love to see the leaves starting to turn. So spending time in the outdoors, that's my way. Oh, and the outdoors might actually be my outdoor living area, watching football as well. But either way, spending time outside.
Yeah, it is definitely fall football weather, and more, it's good to have a team to cheer for that's got a chance at winning every time they play. But, you know, I'm kind of similar. We have a place that overlooks Kessler Park, which is a beautiful area up here in Northwest Arkansas. And a lot of times I'll just prop a chair up back there on a cool evening and we've got 8 goats and 4 sheep, and just there's a lot of peace and tranquility watching them be goats and sheep and just relaxing occasionally with an adult beverage to enjoy as well. But it's nothing like fall in the Ozarks for sure.
Well, let's talk integrative healthcare and whole healthcare. Very excited. I know we had the opportunity to chat a couple of months ago and I had a pretty extensive experience in my family with just this need for restorative healthcare, integrative healthcare. So talk a little bit about the Whole Health Institute and what you're looking to do there in Bentonville and around the world with the work there.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you all know, and we have known for quite some time, that our current healthcare system is really quite broken, and this is pre-COVID, of course. It's only worse now. But I'm a physician, as you mentioned, so I feel like I can be critical of the system. I'm not critical of the people. The people are working tremendously hard, but fundamentally, we have a reactive healthcare system that is pretty good at reacting. Like if you're in a crisis or a trauma, you know, U.S. medicine's good at coming in and like rescuing you and finding the problem and fixing it. But that's waiting till like the 11th hour to try to find a problem and fix it. And so if we really try, Whole Health is focused on helping people live their fullest life. So it's based on what's most important to that person in their life. And in order to live your fullest life, if it's the beginning, middle, or end of your life, you have to take care of your health, mental, psychological, spiritual. So Whole Health is really trying to do that. And our institute is trying to drive the systems that create those opportunities. And so it's not just looking at healthcare delivery systems and hospitals and clinics, it's working with employers. Because when you think about it, where do you live much of your days? Usually in the workplace, or often in the workplace. So how do we address people's health and well-being in the workplace? And what about in the community where we live and work and play every day? So we are looking across these different strategies because there's a lot of great work going on in employers, in healthcare systems, and in the communities, but those are not often coalesced. So we're trying to drive change by partnering across those different systems.
So when you talk about partnering with employers, give us an idea of what that looks like today versus what you think it might look like in the future.
Oh, great. Thank you. So, you know, employers are very motivated to address the health and well-being of their people for obvious reasons. A, they want to do the right thing. B, there's a lot of cost savings if you do that well. But right now, employee health has been really focused on wellness programs. And as we know, wellness programs do not, in and of themselves, work very well. Partially because you have to be really motivated to take advantage of those programs. So usually it's the people who are already addressing their health and well-being that take advantage of it. That's great. But the vast majority of the rest of us who are oftentimes just trying to get through the day, they're not being touched by those programs. So the concept of a whole health program really flips the entire paradigm. When you're talking about innovation, I was thinking about transformational as opposed to something that I would call continuous improvement of the current paradigm. What makes something really transformational is you're actually changing the purpose of the thing, right? So in this example, we're changing the purpose of employee whole health to not be, lower your weight, drop your cholesterol, etc., but to actually help people live their fullest life. So there's a huge peer-to-peer component of that that helps people figure out what they want their health for and what really matters to them in their life. And starting from that place, as opposed to, you need to lose weight or address your diabetes, etc. And that's the empowerment piece. Once people are empowered, the program then helps equip them with new skills, new support, new ways to eat, new ways to move their body, et cetera. But the equipping doesn't work if you're not first empowered. So it's a real shift in paradigm and a completely different way to think about, in this example, employee wellness programs. It's not the same old thing. Doing more of the same is not going to work.
So how do you... this mammoth healthcare system that's been in existence for decades, arguably doing the same thing, or at least from the same perspective, how do you interrupt the thought patterns of what has been just a legacy healthcare system to begin thinking differently as a system?
Well, the question of real disruptive thinking, as you guys know, this is what you do in your work, that first of all, there has to be a reason for people to change or systems to change, because change is really hard. So in that circumstance, you have a lot of reason to change, if for no other reason, the economics of healthcare. Mm-hmm. The economics of healthcare in this nation are crippling the nation. We will no longer be able to compete globally because our cost of healthcare, which is huge and rising all of the time without good outcomes, is not sustainable. So there is now like a wake-up call for the nation to go, we must change. So that's the first thing that has to happen. There has to be a real reason. You know, who was it that used to call it the burning platform, right? A reason to change. I guess that was John Carter. So, we've got that. But then the question is, well, what does the transformed state look like? Unless we have a vision of what is the thing that we want to become, changing for the sake of change, and I'm sure you see this a lot in business. Oh, we have a new idea. We have something that's innovative. Okay, but for sake of what?
Right.
Let's get really clear. What is the purpose of that change? Because change for the sake of change is not going to work either. So really clearly identifying, oh, in a transformed system, people are actually engaged in their own health. They have the tools to address their self-care. Their costs definitely go down. Their outcomes definitely get better. But the most important thing is they have their life back, and they have a sense of being in charge of their health and well-being. That's a totally different paradigm. So that disruptive thing, they have to have the burning platform. You have to have, in my opinion, a vision of the future state, even though we know we don't understand it completely, and it will continue to evolve. And then you need to pull the levers that help you get from the current state to the future state. So a good example of this in healthcare is if we keep paying for and measuring, you get what you measure, right?
Mm-hmm. So
if we
That's keep right.
That's right.
And measuring transactions, numbers of surgeries, numbers of procedures, pharmaceuticals prescribed, we will get more of that, period. So we have to, one of the levers is actually changing how we incentivize and pay for healthcare. And if we actually pay systems to keep people healthy, and we pay for value, or you know, the term is value-based payment and value-based care, as opposed to transactional, interventional fee for service, that is a huge driver in aligning the incentives to this future state.
This is a giant undertaking, and it feels like a movement in many respects.
Yeah.
As you think about it, in order for that to be successful, you've got behavior changes across a population of people that all have different motives, that all have different degrees of security or insecurity about their life situation. Break that down for. Where do you go first? I mean, classically, when we're thinking about innovation, we think, well, we're going to start with the innovators and the early adopters. You know, they'll be the agents of change, and then you move through a population. And eventually, you're taking shots at the laggards and the Luddites and all those of us who are maybe slower to change. How do you think about it? You mentioned some of that, but talk us through the process and the timeline for how it all works.
Absolutely. I smiled when you said it sounds like a movement, because that's exactly right. I mean, that's how we think about this, that the only way it's really going to change is if it becomes a movement, a grassroots movement that starts with people and organizations. I think the reason it's an exciting time to be in this work, and I think the reason the time is right for the Institute, is, again, so much effort has gone into trying to drive change that affects health and outcomes and costs. And there's tremendous work in these silos, right? In the silos of healthcare, employers, communities. I mean, we could go on and on. And everybody's in their silo trying to make a change. And the thing I think the Institute can do, and where we're starting, is first identifying we don't need to recreate the wheel, right? We are not the experts. What we are is an entity that can convene and catalyze great work already happening. So mapping what grassroots efforts are going on and what are they learning, and how can we be aware of that and be in relationship with those grassroots movements so we can learn from and with them, right? Who are the thought leaders nationally or even beyond, from whom we can think together and learn? So the concept of thought leaders and mapping the thought leaders. And then for each of these areas, workplace, communities, health systems, we're looking at and developing partnerships where if there's an entity, for example, if there's an employer who says, we are all in, like we're trying to solve this problem too. And if the Whole Health Institute can partner with us and help us as we co-create this new approach to employee health, as an example, we want to do it. We'll share metrics, we'll learn together, we'll grow together. So our strategy is really about identifying the grassroots movements, the partners already making change, and then we consider ourselves an innovation engine. So can we innovate together with those already committed and making progress, and then learn, capture the outcomes, constantly evaluate what works and doesn't work, and then scale it. So then we want to share lessons learned. We have ongoing trainings that we're offering at no charge to share and get the word out. So we then become a deployment arm working with the organizations that want to take this on. That's the long term. We're just getting started and standing ourselves up, but that's the strategy.
Hey folks, we'll be right back with the episode. But first, we want to tell you about a limited opportunity to take advantage of our strategic growth diagnostic. For a short time only, we're offering a free strategy call to see whether or not our unique diagnostic tool is right for you. Go to innovationjunkie.com/diagnostic to learn more.
Can you share some of maybe an anecdote or two or an experience or two of where you see some really thought leadership happening, some really game-changing things going on from your experiences around the country?
Well, I think, yes, I think that around the country or in the region, which do you want to
say? Either way, I'll leave that to you.
Okay, because there's a lot of amazing stuff happening here. I'm so mm-hmm. excited to be in Northwest Arkansas. Maybe I'll just do a couple of conversations about some of the thought leaders in Northwest Arkansas, and there are many, so I hopefully won't offend anybody by not mentioning other folks, but the one that comes to mind is actually Arisa. In the mental health world. And, Arisa is an entity that cares for, I believe, 2 out of every 3 Arkansans with mental health concerns or needs. And there's a lot of that. All of us, in my opinion, have mental health needs and concerns and addressing emotional well-being. Great example, because we feel as though addressing mental and emotional and spiritual well-being is a huge piece of whole health. But we're not the ones to do that and provide that. But a great example of partnering with Arisa, who is very committed to this vision and this approach and transforming their approach to a more whole health approach, that we are now partnering with them. We're training their leadership, their clinicians. They have a group that we get to participate in that is driving this in their organization. So it's a small example, but a hugely important one, that they own it. It's their vision and mission. We're partnering with them to help execute and implement and learn. And then that becomes a model, an example of how do you do mental health differently that can be disseminated nationally and globally. And of course, every community is different and every organization is different. So we certainly don't mean to say, oh, well, we have the template and here, cut and paste and there you go. Northwest Arkansas is tremendously different than many other parts of the country. But in a living laboratory, an innovation engine, we can learn a tremendous amount and then begin to partner more broadly, nationally and globally. So that's just one example, but there are many.
Do you see part of that is us taking on a variety of kind of small experiments along the way? Is there a lot of experimentation where you say, well, this is interesting. Is this something that can be scaled? Can we try it? I mean, talk about some of these small experiments that you might undertake in your pathway towards making real change.
Yeah, I think that the experiments or, pilots, innovation is the heart of the transformation. Because again, I think we can pretty clearly define, as many people have, what the problem is and what the future state is. But the real challenge, as you all know, you're implementers. I'm an implementer. I mean, I love the vision, but if we can't execute on it, it really makes no difference. So how do we actually get from the current state to the future state, the as is to the will be, right? Those are important things. So the way I believe, once you clearly define our best thinking right now of a transformed state, what does it look like when people and families are empowered and equipped to take charge of their health and well-being in their community and in their workplace, and it's aligned with their clinical care? Well, what does that look like? Once we define that, then the small pilots, the innovation, the learning of how do you actually make it happen is actually absolutely critical. So you know, working with employers, you know, one of many employers who are on board with this, you know, Simmons, and Todd Simmons has this great vision of the future state and says, hey, let's learn together. Let's address this with peers and through a whole different set of mechanisms. So piloting in that regard is huge. And the health systems are all on board too. Now the challenge with health systems, of course, is that they have been really, really swamped with COVID. So their bandwidth for, oh, let's do new training or think of a new way of doing things in the day-to-day is very challenged. However, I will tell you, every one of the health systems is on board and committed and moving forward with this. Our focus has shifted a bit to can we help the clinicians address their own self-care? Can that be where we start? Because once people have a personal experience of it, then they can really get going and make a huge difference. So the learning together across all of those different things is a critical piece.
You know, to follow up on your point, one of the things that has been a kind of a residue from the pandemic is we see the degree of stress that it's placing on frontline clinicians, nurses, and all. In fact, to the extent that many of them are leaving the profession or are going to other care organizations that aren't directly involved with all the triage and the difficulties with COVID. How are you thinking about their health and their mind-body connection, putting them in a better place?
Well, I think that's a critical, that's always been a challenge. You know, even if you look at suicide rates among clinicians pre-COVID, it's a profession that's very much at risk. Then you layer on, as you described, the tremendous stress and difficulty of the circumstances that we're in, and that is now prolonged, right? Like if you want to kind of create the perfect high stress environment, this is it. And you don't see an end in sight, and you're surrounded by human suffering. And you know, the human psyche was not actually designed to absorb so much suffering. It's true for everyone, not just healthcare workers. And when you think about what the media exposes us to, we're exposed to like all the suffering around the globe every day if we allow ourselves to. And we're not designed to do that. So we all individually are dealing with tremendous levels of stress, and the clinicians are over the moon. So our strategy really around that has been, let us use whole health and these approaches to get grounded again in what matters most to you, and taking small steps every day. I mean, simple things like there's simple paced breathing exercises that take less than a minute that will lower people's blood pressure, their adrenaline, their cortisol, will put them into a much more relaxed state, even while they're surrounded by stressful circumstances. So teaching people those kinds of skills and approaches and letting them get support for their own self-care is critical, because this is a long haul. And this is true, you know, the other thing around those kinds of approaches, people think about it as it relates to their health. It's also related to performance, right? If you want to be able to think clearly at work, if you want to get the most out of your people or your workforce, the more they are grounded and less stressed or have tools to manage their stress, the more productive they're going to be. So coming at that through the personal experience is a really, you referenced a grassroots movement. A grassroots movement doesn't start because somebody says, do it, right? A grassroots movement starts because people have a meaningful experience that puts them on fire, that they now want to be part of this movement. So coming through to the personal and having people have an experience of this can change everything.
I don't remember who said it, but it's one of my favorite quotes about change, that until the pain of change is greater than the pain of remaining the same, until the pain of remaining the same is greater than the pain of change, people will generally choose to remain the same. Are you seeing among clinicians and your colleagues, and as you travel the country and certainly in the region and beyond, are you seeing a readiness to change among the physicians and other practitioners on the front lines?
Yeah, I would say we're actually seeing a desperateness to change.
Okay.
I would describe pre-COVID nationally a readiness to change, because most clinicians were saying, look, this stuff you're talking about that you call whole health, that's what we went into healthcare for, right? It aligns with their, you're from healthcare, right? It aligns with their values. They went into healthcare to have that kind of relationship with their patients and the people they're working with. So there was a readiness, and said, if you could please change the system. So I don't get counted and paid by how many people I see in a 60-minute window, but rather really help them produce health and well-being, value-based as opposed to fee-for-service, there was already a readiness for that nationally, in my opinion. And now there's a desperateness. Now there's like, we are stretched so thin, we cannot keep doing this the way we are. And perhaps that's a hidden blessing of COVID. I hope to think of it when it comes to any blessings, but I think it really has shined a light on these issues, and will never be the same. And I don't think we can or should go back.
Well, you know, telehealth is one example. We talk about the only thing required for innovation to occur is the presence of constraints. And telehealth technology has been around for, a decade, 7 or 8 years? It was the adoption was the issue. And the constraint of COVID basically said to clinicians, either don't get paid or use telehealth. And all of a sudden, we went from 0 to 60% of our visits via telehealth. So to your point, while we would certainly struggle to say the hidden blessing, but COVID is a constraint that has pushed us over the tipping point, perhaps, to begin looking at what maybe even just 5 years ago might be considered radical change.
Exactly. No, and one of my favorite sayings is you can't have breakthroughs without having breakdowns. Mm. You know, it's another way of really saying what you're saying, that. And it is true, and we're in this massive breakdown right now. So I want us to do a massive breakthrough, you know, and not simply survive and go back to the way it was. That would be a huge, huge loss if we did that. And so I think the opportunity is now for sure, and really disrupting the status quo.
Well, let's talk about the future. Go ahead, Jeff. I think you were going to ask a question before I transition.
Yeah, just one thing. I mean, we've talked about a lot of the positivity associated with change and the movement and whatnot. But with every great change, there's those that, to their dying breath, kind of stand in the way. They're saboteurs to the movement. And you've talked about some of that, but how do you at least neutralize those groups? And I'll give you a good analogy. Just there's a reason why there's never any meaningful change to tax policy is because there's an installed base of people, not necessarily politicians, that wouldn't benefit by a change in the tax policy. Their livelihood might come from complication associated with tax regulations and the fact that you need third parties to help you through it. How do you neutralize or turn those saboteurs that are fighting every day to slow down or stop the movement because they don't want the change to occur?
Mm-hmm. Well, I love that question. I've always been working in large system change, so not just innovation and entrepreneurial, but really trying to disrupt large systems. And I will tell you what you already know is that for large systems, that is absolutely true. There is nothing in a system that wants to change, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the leadership things I think that's important to pay attention to is when you, I always tell my team, because at the beginning of trying to do real innovation and disrupt large systems, usually there's not much resistance, to your point, Jeff. At the beginning, there's usually not much resistance, and people can get a false sense of, oh, you know, this isn't so bad. Like, you know, everybody wants to see health and well-being improve, right? What's wrong with that? That's not actually what's happening in my experience. What's actually happening is that nobody takes you seriously. Like, they're like, yeah, right, sure. We've seen your types before. Yeah, you're getting the system. Good luck with that. So nobody bothers resisting. You know, and this is all at an unconscious level. This is the way I'm obsessed with systems thinking and systems theory. And this is the way systems are, right? So they only get resistant once they start getting nervous, right? Yeah. They start going, uh-oh, like there's actually traction happening there. Or to your point, oh, wow, we're starting to move into value-based care. That means if I'm an interventionist, I could lose in this game. So, right? So then what happens if you have a timeline of large system transformation, after that kind of beginning phase where no one's paying attention, if you are making traction, people start to get nervous. I remember ages ago, I was at University of Arizona and we started this program in integrative medicine, which at that point was really perceived as in bringing in complementary or even quote unquote alternative approaches. Even things like acupuncture and stuff was considered really out of the box back then. And there was this picture, it was cartoon in the New York Times, I think it was, or New York version. And it was a one frame. It had these two presumably like conventional looking doctors with their white coats and their stethoscopes walking out of a looks like a health system. And the one says to the other, I'll tell you what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid that we're becoming the alternative.
Mm.
When that happens, when you get to this stage of transformation where people go, oh, crap, like there's actually traction happening here and this might actually come to be, the resistance kicks in. And it usually kicks in big and ugly because, and again, it's not an evil thing, but it's a survival thing. The system that's dominant, the paradigm that's dominant, wants to stay dominant. So it will do anything it can to squash the innovation. The best way to deal with that is hard. I mean, it's super hard and it takes a long time. One is just endurance, you know, staying the course. The other is I really come at that through experience and incentive. So the more I can reach people who are resistant or systems that are resistant and understand their resistance, and sometimes it's straightforward, you know, Big Pharma is on my whiteboard over here. You know, Big Pharma may not on the surface be a fan of whole health because pharmaceutical use goes down. Well, what are we going to do about that? Well, hopefully we make them a partner in the future state and they begin to see their own innovative opportunities for their industry in a whole health world. If we don't engage them, they will consciously or unconsciously, as an example, work to undermine that system change. So I think it is, and it sounds kind of cliche-ish, but bringing those systems in early and those leaderships early, helping them own and see their future state, because to your point, it won't, if this is successful, it will not be the same. And outpatient costs go down and interventions go down and pharmaceuticals go down. So how can we partner with those systems to be a part of that transformation? Otherwise, it will be huge resistance. There is always huge resistance.
And we kind of have to, because we've got an aging population on a worldwide basis. So it's not like we've got a choice in the matter. We've got to find another way to do it. I mean, and Jeff, you were about to ask. Well, thank you for that, Tracy.
Yeah,
that was great.
I was going to transition a little bit. You know, we've added in the state of Arkansas two osteopathic medical schools in the last 6 years, and now we're going to be adding a second allopathic medical school in Northwest Arkansas with the Whole Health Institute. Tell us about the vision for that medical school and how will it be different than what we're used to?
I'm so glad you asked that question because it's another agent of change. So we are helping, and just for the audience, it's important, I think, for the audience to be aware that the Northwest Arkansas community identified that they wanted a school of medicine. And so it wasn't something that we came marching in and said, we're going to do a school of medicine. It actually wasn't even on my original radar screen until I got here. And that the region said, we want another medical school up here. And as you said, two great osteopathic schools are in the state, and then UAMS and Little Rock primarily. So what's that about and what's the opportunity? So when the region said we want another medical school here to serve this population and help us with the physician shortage that we have, we went, wow, well, if the region is supportive of it, we could create this, you know, it's a conventional 4-year MD program. And because we're building it from scratch, we have the opportunity to integrate whole health throughout that education and training. And that has been a problem for driving transformation in the existing situation, because right now, to your point, the current medical school curricula across the nation is jam-packed for 4 years. Yeah. And now you want to march in and say, well, there's a new philosophy and a new approach. And yes, you're still going to learn surgery and you're still going to learn how to deliver babies and blah, blah, blah. But you can do that in a whole health approach, which is a very different philosophy and approach. It's very difficult to integrate that education and experience into an already existing mature medical school and program. What we have the opportunity to do now, because we're starting from whole cloth, is build that in from the beginning. So one practical way it will look different is the physician is in a whole health approach, no longer the centerpiece of the healthcare team. I mean, people may not like me saying that, but they're an incredibly important part. But the team now has not only other providers like nurses or nurse practitioners and PAs, et cetera, but has other team members like trained peers who are trained in a whole health approach. And they're the ones having conversations with people about their life and what matters to them and what they want their health for. Those non-clinical things are much better done by whole health peers. And there's coaches and there's other members of the team that when you're trained in that model as a physician, you go, wow, I don't have to do it all, right? Like, this is a very different interdisciplinary team. It's even broader than what people are used to thinking about. So we get to build that here in conjunction with our partners. And there's a tremendous amount of freedom. It's also a huge lift and it's a lot of work. But in terms of innovation and driving change, to model that and pilot that and then disseminate the curriculum and disseminate lessons learned around the nation and globe is going to be a hugely exciting opportunity.
Very good. Well, we're talking with Dr. Tracy Gaudette, Executive Director of the Whole Health Institute in Bentonville, Arkansas, about the future of healthcare and the role that she and her team at the Whole Health Institute are playing in transforming healthcare across not just the country, but around the world. And it's a pleasure having you with us today, Tracy.
Thank you so much. I love talking to you guys.
Well, we're really glad we had you on. And the one thing I can say for sure is, people ask sometimes, what's the definition of an innovator or an entrepreneur? And it's somebody that is perpetually dissatisfied with the status quo, in my book. And you fit that mold to a T, and we're so glad you're here.
Oh, thank you so much. It's when I read about you all and your organization, I was like, oh, these guys are so like-minded. I can't wait to talk to y'all.
Well, it has been a pleasure visiting with you, and we hope for maybe get you back in a few months to talk about advancements that have occurred since today.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for reaching out, and keep up the great work y'all are doing.
We'll do it. Thank you so much. This has been another episode of the Innovation Junkies podcast. Thank you for joining.
Hey folks, this is Jeff Amrine. We want to thank you for tuning in. We sincerely appreciate your time. If you're enjoying the Innovation Junkies podcast, please do us a huge favor. Click the subscribe button right now and please leave us a review. It would mean the world to both of us. And don't forget to share us on social media.